What's up, comrades? Welcome to the Left Side of Liberty podcast, and it's good to be back with you. I admit I slipped up on my promise to you guys to upload weekly, but I figured out a solution to that, and that is recording and uploading on weekends rather than weekdays. So you may have I may have some conflict with that, and you know, it just depends on my work schedule and whatever. But I'm sure there's some way that I can work around my work schedule. So anyway, a lot of stuff's been happening since I've been away, as usually happens. There's the impeachment thing, and so Trump's been officially impeached, and we're going to get to that later a little bit. A related story to that. So Trump has been impeached, and it's interesting because now we're seeing that the establishment is really, really scared. Well, they have been scared for the last 3 or 4 years, but they've been extra scared because they see the fallout of, I guess in their terms, allowing Trump to be elected. They didn't see him coming, they didn't take him seriously, and he got elected. Same thing, by the way, with these like fake right-wing populist movements around the world. That's the same principle, because people are tired of neoliberal centrism from these so-called lefties, you know, like Barack Obama, Emmanuel Macron, you know, all these guys, way back, Tony Blair, he hasn't been in politics for a while, but when Tony Blair was the head of the Labor Party, he represented that same ideology of neoliberal centrism posing as this like pseudo lefty bullshit kind of bullshit. So and that's the Bill Clinton strategy. This all goes back to Reagan and Clinton. That's what I would say. Just this, again, this neoliberal centrism, you try to appeal to, especially under Clinton, you try to appeal to the left by, or at least your stereotype, your caricature of the left, by siding with them on social issues, but on fiscal policy, your hardline right-wing austerity, tax cuts for the rich, you know, all these policies are classic neoliberal centrism. And Obama was like that to a large extent. There were some times where he deviated and actually acted like a progressive, like commuting the sentences and pardoning nonviolent drug offenders. That's an example where he sort of bucked neoliberal centrist orthodoxy. But most often, he didn't, you know? So, anyway. So that's the main point that I'm trying to make here, is that Donald Trump, Boris Johnson, I think it's Berlusconi or somebody, whoever it is in Italy, I forget at the moment, but they're all symptoms. These like fake right-wing populists, they're all symptoms of a problem. They are not in themselves. They didn't come out of a vacuum, is my point. They didn't come out of a vacuum. They were just the next logical progression from the neoliberal centrist failure. So, with that said, I want to play you a clip that there's in the double video breakdown. Obviously, there's going to be two videos. The first video is a representative of that neoliberal centrist ideology with another elitist. You know, these are two people that are elitists and completely out of touch. You get the feeling that they have never had a genuine thought in their entire life, or at least since they've been in the mainstream. And I'm talking about, there was a recent interview with Michelle Obama, and she was being interviewed by Jenna Bush, who is kind of like Meghan McCain in the sense that the only reason why these guys are on TV is because of their dads, because their dads were high ups in the government. That's the only reason why people like Meghan McCain and Jenna Bush have jobs, have the jobs that they do. So we're going to take a look at that at first. And then I've got a classic, classic PragerU video for you guys. And I thought it would be appropriate considering the time of year that we're in currently. So you have that to look forward to. And it's once again presented by Mr. Dennis Prager himself. So I couldn't resist. But anyway, let's play the Michelle Obama, Jenna Bush clip. And you'll see what I mean when I'm talking. They're just, it's obvious that they're just smug, out of touch elitists that don't actually care about regular people, and they don't have a single authentic, genuine political take in their life. It's all just repackaged cliches, and it's really annoying. So anyway, they spend the first, it's a 20-minute interview, and they spend the first 15 minutes gushing over basically how awesome they both are, and how, you know, and just playing identity politics, because Michelle Obama was in Vietnam promoting the education of young girls, which of course I support. But then they get into, ooh, you know, the we're women and that means we're great kind of thing, you know. It's like, no, you guys aren't, you know. Women by and large are great. I'm not denying that whatsoever, but you two are not that great. And most of America, I think, would agree with that sentiment with me, except if you read some of the comments in this interview, they're like, oh, Michelle Obama is so classy, so elegant, so eloquent, so articulate. Oh, can't we just go back to the days of respectability in the White House and blah, 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 you know? So anyway, let's listen to what these two elitist clowns have to say.
In this country,
hold on a
second. We've gone through depressions and wars and bombings and terrorist attacks, and we've gone through Jim Crow and, you know, a whole range of things in this country, and we've always come out stronger. And that's what we have to continue to believe, because what's our choice? To ball up in a corner and call it a day? Well, that's not fair to this next generation that's coming before us, mm-hmm. that are counting on us to get this right. We owe it to them to stay focused and engaged and optimistic on their behalf. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have to move beyond this, and we have to come together as a country. You know,
So they're talking about impeachment, but that's not the part of that clip that I want to talk about, because impeachment, yeah, it shouldn't be focused on, and we shouldn't let it divide us and whatever. But the more important point that I want to touch on there is when she starts talking about we've been bombed in our past, which we have, but I just, again, find it a little bit hypocritical when, for instance, Barack Obama expanded. There were two wars started under George W. Bush, Iraq and Afghanistan, and both were pretty much illegitimate, especially with the revelations coming out about Afghanistan, which I may go into in another podcast, but basically it wasn't quite what we were told, surprise, surprise, from the government. It wasn't exactly what we were told, and it was pretty shady. So anyway, the point is, yes, we were bombed and on 9/11, World War II, all that, you know, just all these historical atrocities that were perpetrated on us, but we, especially under Obama, we took those two wars and we turned them into seven, and now we're in eight, I think. It's hard to keep track. Under Trump, we're in eight wars right now, including a genocide in Yemen. So you can't talk about we were bombed and then, with no sense of irony whatsoever. Now, of course, she's not talking about other countries. She's talking about America, and that's fair. But my point is, you can't talk about being bombed when, over the past half century especially, and really more than that, like over the past 70 or so years, we've done a lot of the bombing. And especially since the war on terror, under your husband, Michelle Obama, we did a lot of bombing and killed a lot of innocent civilians, which is why the world is angry at us. And one of the reasons why Tulsi Gabbard wants to get us out of all these stupid wars that your husband put us in and George W. Bush put us in. So your family members, in Jenna Bush's case, your father, and in Michelle Obama's case, your husband, they put our national security at risk for nothing and made us an easier target, and specifically with George W. Bush in regard to Iraq. Again, I think Afghanistan, although I think it's much less legitimate than I thought originally, now I think it's much less legitimate than I previously thought, but I still think we had somewhat of a justification in at least doing something over there. But specifically in regard to Iraq, not a security threat whatsoever. We were lied into it. And by the way, Nancy Pelosi said that we would not, or said that she would not be in favor of impeaching George W. Bush if he was still president, even though he got us into an illegal offensive war without congressional approval and without UN approval. So, unbelievable. But again, George W. Bush is part of the club, and Nancy Pelosi is part of the club. Michelle Obama is part of the club. And in the classic words of George Carlin, as I was saying to my family earlier today, it's a big club and you ain't in it. Most of us are not in that club. We do not have that luxury. Now, I don't necessarily want that luxury, but the fact remains, we are not in that club. So anyway, just a little bit of hypocrisy, I thought, from Michelle Obama. Of course, I'm not poo-pooing or trying to minimize 9/11 or Pearl Harbor or whatever, because those were horrible atrocities. I'm not denying that. But again, we just don't really have a right to talk about bombings, or at least our officials or the relatives of officials don't have the right to talk about being bombed when we have done a lot of the bombing over the last century or so. So, but anyway, let's move on, shall we? And this is where they really start to piss me off. Anyway, carry on.
To stop demonizing one another. It's not an us or them. It's not an R or a D. We are all here as part of this country. We all want the same things. Mm-hmm. Fundamentally, that's what you learn when you travel around the country, mm-hmm. on an international tour. You go to other places around the world, is that people all fundamentally want the same thing. You know, they want to be able to earn a decent living. They want to work. They want to be able to support their families. They want to be respected in their jobs. They want to be able to send their kids to college, perhaps, or make sure they have a decent education. They want to retire with a little dignity. Mm-hmm. That is true for everyone. It doesn't matter what color your skin is, what letter you have by your, you as with regard to your political party, what language you mm-hmm. speak. We all want the same things. It's just sometimes that gets lost in the noise.
So I apologize. It was the next question and the next exchange that really pissed me off. That's actually the one part of the interview that I don't necessarily mind, in the sense that she's saying something that I agree with, which is there seems to be this growing trend, I guess you could call it, in America, where we just go into our little corners, our little niches, our little partisan niches. And so, you know, Democrats are only talking to Democrats, Republicans are only talking to Republicans, and we're judging each other based on that. Now, I'm neither anymore, and I'm glad to be neither anymore. But, you know, the overwhelming majority of the country is either Republican or Democrat. So I understand that. But we really have to stop demonizing people. Like I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I said, you know, I'm just getting sick and tired of this. And I see this a lot on Facebook too. Just this tribalistic bullshit of Republicans good by definition, Democrats bad by definition. Everything the Republicans do is pure and right and just by definition, and everything the Democrats do is evil and bad and wrong by definition, and vice versa as well. You know, because there's a lot of people, ooh, Democrats, they're so wonderful. Ooh, and the Republicans, they're so evil and racist and blah, 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 blah. Now, are there a fair amount of racists within the hardcore Republican base, especially Trump's base? Yes, I would say yes. But there's also people that vote for Trump or voted for Trump and support him and have voted for Republicans because they are so disillusioned with the Democrats, and they know that, again, neoliberal centrism has failed, so they don't really know any better. And they think that's going to help bring back, like, let's say you're a steel worker in Pennsylvania. Let's just use that as an example. And speaking of that, we're going to get into steel workers later on in the podcast, in the forehead. But anyway, let's say you're a steel worker in, like, rural Pennsylvania. I don't think that you're going to just pull a random steelworker off the street and find out that they're a racist. I don't. You know, I think that they're going to say, well, you know, I vote for Republicans because, or especially Trump, because I thought he was going to keep my job here. In America, I thought he was going to impose tariffs that would help the steel industry. I thought, or at least keep the steel jobs here in America. I vote for Republicans because I think that they're going to cut taxes for me, and I've been told that the Democrats always raise taxes and blah, 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 blah. So there are other reasons besides quote unquote racism that factor into why people vote for one party or another, in this case being the Republican Party. And of course, it's not true that the Republicans cut middle-class tax cuts. It's just not, at least not as much as the Democrats do. What the Republicans mean when they say, oh, we're the party of tax cuts, is we'll cut taxes for rich people. Like, that's what they're saying, rich people and corporations. Now, Democrats also occasionally will cut taxes for corporations, but they're at least a little bit better on the issue of taxing the rich. Now, considering how bad the Republicans are, that's not very that's not a very high standard at all. But I think that on tax issues, the Democrats are better. So, at least for working people. So there's, see the difference there? There's a difference between I'm voting for Trump or the Republicans because of like anti-immigrant rhetoric, and I'm voting for Trump because I think he said he was going to keep my job here in the United States and not outsource it to China or to Mexico or India or wherever. So there is a difference there. But anyway, let's get back to... Oh, there is one thing I wanted to say, though. Sorry. So this is why I want to beg and plead with my fellow lefties. Don't generalize in your mind about Trump supporters or Republicans. Yes, there are a lot of bad apples in both of those camps, but there are also, you know, liberals also aren't all good. There are some terrible liberals and probably some racist ones. You know, maybe if you go further south or whatever, you know, you're probably going to encounter some of that. But as a general rule, don't let, as Michelle Obama said, funnily enough, don't let the partisan bullshit prevent you from talking to people and possibly becoming friends with people. Like I've said on this podcast before, most of the people that I met in college, specifically at my four-year college, which was Binghamton University, most of the people that were my friends were young conservative white guys. Like, that's what, you know, those were my friends, that they were conservative Republicans. And we still got along. There were a lot of disagreements, but they were at least willing, most of them, I should say, were at least willing to hear what I had to say. So I'm begging people on the left, don't do that. Don't generalize about your political opponents. Just, you know, take it on a case-by-case basis. Sorry. Because not all Republicans are Richard Spencer or Nick Fuentes or any other neo-Nazi, white supremacist, alt-righter you can think of. So, anyway, let's carry on here, because this is where Michelle Obama really pisses me off.
Speaking of, I think you're friends with both Ellen and my dad.
Yes.
And they sat next to each other, which caused some sort of online backlash. Mm-hmm. Your husband recently talked about the dangers of cancel culture.
Yeah.
Like, what do you say to people that want to be closer with each other? Or how? What do you say to that?
Well, this is part of what, the book, my book, Becoming, was about. That when we drop our guards and we let ourselves become vulnerable, and that vulnerability allows us to share our true stories with each other. Not, you know, not the stuff on the surface, but the things that really connect us, like how we were raised, the values that we learned around the dinner table, the people who impacted us in our lives, the things that made us scared, the things that gave us courage. That when we share that truth, we can see ourselves in each other a little bit better.
No matter what,
right?
You are.
You know, your dad is someone that I've, you take the politics out of it. Mm-hmm. And I had an opportunity to sit by your father at funerals, the mm-hmm. highs and the lows, and we shared stories about our kids and about our parents. Our values are the same. Mm-hmm. We disagree on policy, mm-hmm. but we don't disagree on humanity. We don't.
Okay. All right. Yep, I told you, this is where she really pisses me off. Okay. I haven't addressed the Ellen thing on my podcast, but this is a good segue for that. So there was this big controversy, I can't remember how long ago it was, like a month ago, 2 months ago, I don't know. Anyway, Ellen DeGeneres was sitting next to George W. Bush at, was it the World Series or was it a football game? Something like, I think it was a football game. And there was this big controversy online because people were saying that's normalizing war criminals. You're like, that's what you're doing. So Michelle, the thing I would say, or Ellen, if I was talking to her as well, people weren't, now maybe some people were mad because of the partisan issue, but certainly for people like me and a lot of my friends and a lot of my comrades, if you will, it was not that you were sitting next to George W. Bush because he was a Republican that pissed people off. No, what pissed people off is you were sitting next to George W. Bush, a war criminal, and normalizing it and yucking it up with him and laughing and giggling as if it's totally normal. And same thing with you, Michelle Obama. This is what I want to say to you, too. People didn't get mad at Ellen or you for sort of mingling, if you will, with George W. Bush because he was a Republican. It's because he is a war criminal and he deserves to be at The Hague right now. But no, instead of being at The Hague, he's yucking it up with celebrities at baseball games and football games and whatever, just sporting events in general. So that's what people are mad at. Like, if you commit a crime, if like the average person on the street sells a little bit of weed, he may have his whole life ruined. You know, if you're somebody like me who's 23 and you get caught selling weed and you are in jail, your life most likely is destroyed. But you can be a war criminal, kill hundreds of thousands of innocent people, and you can walk freely wherever you want to go, have total freedom of movement, and, you know, chuckle and giggle and smile with celebrities at sporting events. That's what people are mad about. That's their beef with that clip. Or that not that clip, that photo. So, it just pisses me off. That really pisses me off. And by the way, your husband, Michelle, Barack, he was not that different from George W. Bush. I'm sorry, at least on foreign policy, was not that different. In fact, was worse. So, because again, he took Bush's two wars and expanded them to seven. So, I think they agreed a lot more than Michelle Obama is laying on, like, ooh, we disagreed on policy. Okay, healthcare you disagreed on, gay rights you disagreed on. Other than that, I don't really see much of a difference. I mean, Obama implemented austerity measures, which is probably something Bush would have done if he was still president, at the height of the Great Recession, and the subprime mortgage crisis and all of that. If he were still like in the thick of it, when he was still in office. So anyway, I'm gonna see if I can get through the last couple of minutes here of this interview without throwing my phone across my floor here.
Don't disagree about love and compassion.
Love and compassion? Are you kidding me? What's loving and compassionate about locking up immigrants at the border, putting them in cages? What is loving and compassionate about, again, locking up nonviolent drug offenders? And then, to be fair, again, Obama, toward the end of his presidency, started freeing a lot of those people. What? And then, of course, the bombing of innocent brown people overseas. What is loving and compassionate about that? What is loving and compassionate, and this is specifically referencing George W. Bush now, what is loving and compassionate about torturing people? And, again, killing hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians. What is... Oh, my God. Unbelievable. Now, I know what Michelle Obama means. She means in their personal lives, they value love and compassion and whatever. And, they're nice to people around them, which is fine and dandy. That's great. But you guys still have a lot of blood on your hands. And it's unbelievable. But again, ultimately, these policy discussions don't matter because they're two sides of the same coin. Barack Obama and George W. Bush and Jenna Bush and Michelle Obama, they're two sides of the exact same coin. Again, once again, to quote George Carlin, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And Michelle Obama, Jenna Bush, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama are all part of that club and very high up within that club. So, unbelievable.
I think that's true for all of us. It's just that we get lost in our fear of what's different. So yeah, we've got to work on that. But I think that this generation coming up, I think they know more than we did. Each generation knows a little bit more. While one can argue that social media is problematic, it's also opening young people up to new ideas, to each other, to other parts of
the... Oh God, here we go with the I word, the ideas thing. Now, this is just a petty thing on my part, but I think people like Dave Rubin and Ben Shapiro have kind of like worn me out on the whole ideas thing. Like, ooh, new ideas, the marketplace of ideas. It's like, I don't care about ideas so much as policies. There's a big difference. New ideas. But the one thing I did want to give Michelle Obama credit for, which I forgot about to address the last time I stopped the clip, was she was talking about how we all want the same thing ultimately, which is kind of the message that I try to convey on this podcast, although not in the exact same way that she means it. I mean, working people have a lot in common. They both want to take care of their families and do all the, provide a good future for their kids and whatever. So she's right about that. But the ironic part is that future is held in serious jeopardy in the hands of people like you. Like you jeopardize that future. And you're too much in your own bubble to realize that, both you and Jenna Bush, Michelle Obama. So it's people like you and your relatives, the company you keep, your friends and your relatives impede working people from not only realizing that they're very similar in what they want out of life, but also they're very similar in that we're all human beings and that we need to come together in order to fend off people like Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, George W. Bush, Jenna Bush, all of these guys. So let's get through the last minute or so here.
The world, my hope is that they will be more open-minded and more secure in who they are so that they can welcome other people's stories into the mix. But it has to begin with us being willing to be vulnerable and share who we really are with our neighbors so that we're not strangers to each other. And that way we can't let somebody else from the outside tear us apart because we know each other, right? I know you. I've seen you. We broke bread together, you know? I may not agree with you, but I like you. You are my neighbor. That takes work and commitment.
Mm-hmm. You've had a remarkable year. How would you describe 2019 as you wrap it up? Ooh. In a few words?
Wow, 2019.
Very hard-hitting questions, Jenna. Oh, my God. Very hard-hitting question there. Oh, what was your 2019 like? It's funny how, again, there were no questions on... Why did your husband, as soon as he left office, give, I think it was a quarter of a million dollar speech to Wall Street? Why did your husband kill the son of Anwar al-Awlaki without congressional approval and without any due process? Now, Anwar al-Awlaki, I think it's Abdul al-Awlaki was the son, but Anwar was a jihadist. He was a terrorist. So I'm not defending Anwar al-Awlaki. I'm defending the son, who I think was Abdul. And there's evidence that he was not really on that great of terms with his father and actively disagreed with his father and tried to distance himself from his father. Obama killed the guy with a drone. He was an American citizen. Abdul al-Awlaki, I think it was Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki, something like that. He killed this guy, this poor guy, with a drone, without any due process whatsoever. And of course, Jenna Bush didn't say a damn word to Michelle about that. Or it's not just her. If Barack was in that interviewee seat, I doubt Jenna Bush would ask him directly, hey, how come you killed Abdul al-Awlaki without due process? You know, it's like, oh my God, these elitists are just so cringe, man. So cringe. Jesus Christ. Can you two, like, if you look at this video, they have these, like, fake-ass smiles going on the entire time. You know, it's like these, like, fake... Can you guys be genuine and authentic for just 3 seconds? You know, like, is that so much to ask? Really? Anyway, at least with this next, you know, I can't even finish this video. There's not my, again, it's just flowery, ooh, how was your year? Ooh, you know, what you gonna do with the kiddos when you get home kind of thing, you know, kind of like the way they started the interview, which was, ooh, you know, Malia and Sasha are in college now and blah, 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 blah. Now, by the way, I don't want people to hear that and think that I'm including Sasha and Malia Obama in my rant here. I'm not. They're completely exempt from my ranting and raving here. So I don't want that implied that I'm sort of lumping them in with their parents. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying that that's what the interview, like the first half of the interview was like, oh, you know, how was dropping the kids off at college, Michelle? You know, it's just like, oh my God. these people, they don't talk about anything serious. They don't care about anything serious. They don't care about anybody but themselves and their little stupid bubble. And speaking of somebody that doesn't care about serious issues, let's go to the classic PragerU video. And this is one that was put out a few years ago. And it's called Just Say Merry Christmas. Very serious issue there. So, Dennis, I gotta see if there's an ad. And there's not. Cool. Okay. So, Dennis, my man, take it away.
The change from wishing fellow Americans Merry Christmas to wishing them Happy Holidays is a very significant development. Proponents of Happy Holidays argue it's no big deal. Proponents of Merry Christmas are making a mountain out of a molehill.
True.
But the Happy Holidays advocates want it both ways. They dismiss opponents as hysterical, but at the same time, in addition to replacing Merry Christmas with Happy Holidays, they have relentlessly pushed to replace Christmas vacation with winter vacation and Christmas party with holiday party. So then...
Okay. So before we go any further, let me offer my serious, honest opinion on this whole issue. I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit if you say Happy Holidays to me. I don't give a shit if you say Merry Christmas. I don't care. Because, you know, it's not a serious issue to me. It's not a big deal. Like, around where I live in a pretty rural area. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, white Christians, quite frankly, that live in this area. So it is more likely that a person celebrates Christmas. And over 90% of the American people celebrate Christmas, by the way. So, yes, ideally, of course, you should say Merry Christmas or whatever. But if you're in a big city and you go up to, say, a Buddhist or something like that, you shouldn't say Merry Christmas, because they don't, you know, even though the odds are good that they still, that they will still celebrate Christmas, there's still 10% of the population that doesn't celebrate Christmas. So it would be more courteous to err on the side of, you know, just say Happy Holidays or whatever. But again, overall, I don't care about this issue at all, and I don't see why anybody would care. Now, the reason why people now call things holiday parties and holiday vacations or winter vacations or whatever is because, again, Christmas is not the only holiday that takes place during the wintertime. There's Hanukkah, there's Kwanzaa, there's Ramadan. I mean, there's all these people that that don't celebrate Christmas. So it is a little bit more inclusive and all-encompassing to say Happy Holidays as opposed to Merry Christmas. But either way, like I said, it doesn't really matter to me. It's not that big of a deal to me either way. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. You know, if I was, say, a Muslim or a Hindu and I didn't celebrate Christmas and somebody said Merry Christmas to me, I wouldn't necessarily be offended. And I think it would be a little bit ridiculous for people to be offended by somebody saying Merry Christmas. So in that way, I'm actually kind of agreeing with Dennis Prager. But my point is, I still think, just as a matter of I almost said currency, As a matter of courtesy, I think you should just say happy holidays, because Dennis is right when he says that there are certain people that say that saying Merry Christmas is not that big of a deal, but then make a deal out of the happy holidays thing. But Dennis represents the opposite, where he's saying, where he's saying, no, Merry Christmas is a huge deal, and let me get my panties in a bunch over happy holidays. So it's reversed. And he's going to talk more about that in just a moment here. So let's continue.
And which is it? Is all this elimination of the word Christmas important or not? The answer is obvious. It's very important. That's why so much effort is devoted to substituting other words for Christmas. And these efforts have been extraordinarily successful. In place of the universal Merry Christmas of my youth, in recent decades...
Ah, that's what it's about. That's what it's about. Thank you, Dennis, for revealing what it's actually about. So, you can define, I guess, what's called conservatism today in just three words. In my day, like, that's literally the conservative philosophy in a nutshell. In my day. So, or he says in my youth, but same thing. Same idea. So that's what this is about. He just wants to sort of relive his youth because he's insecure about getting old. So anyway, continue.
I have been wished happy holidays by every waiter and waitress in every restaurant I have dined, by everyone who welcomes me at any business, by my flight attendants and pilots, and by just about everyone else. When I respond, thank you, Merry Christmas, I often sense that I've actually created some tension. Many of those I wish Merry Christmas are probably relieved to hear someone who feels free to utter the C word, but all the sensitivity training they've had to undergo creates cognitive dissonance.
What the hell are you talking about, Dennis? What are you talking about? First of all, I find it hard to believe that there was, you know, a flight that he was on where a whole bunch of passengers and the flight attendants and the crew and all that were like, oh, he said Merry Christmas. Oh my God. You know, I doubt that that actually happened. I can't, of course, I can't be sure about that, but I doubt that that happened. I'm pretty sure he's just making that up to support his narrative. But also, cognitive dissonance, what are you talking about? They probably had other things on their mind, like the safety of the passengers, you know, all the other stuff that they've got to worry about. They, you know, probably didn't give very much thought to your thank you, Merry Christmas thing. And by the way, they were with your, see, this is what I love about Dennis Prager more than anything. He's just so self-righteous and so full of himself, as he constantly slams the left as being the narcissists. He is hugely narcissistic. All he cares about is himself, and he doesn't give a shit about anybody else, except, again, those people that are in his bubble. He is just so pompous and, again, self-righteous and self-serving. It's just, it's ridiculous. Anyway, let's continue here. Cognitive dissonance for saying Merry Christmas. Oh my God.
The opponents of Merry Christmas and other uses of the word Christmas know exactly what they're doing. They're disingenuous when they dismiss defenders of Merry Christmas as fabricating some, quote, war on Christmas. Of course it's a war on Christmas.
Wrong. Wrong. There is no war on Christmas, Dennis. There is no war on Christmas. There you know, what he's talking about is, again, the SJWE kind of quasi pseudo lefty kind of internetosphere, the sort of blogosphere, if you will, that has like 10 people in it where they get offended by everything, including Merry Christmas. But that's not a war. That's just people being stupid. You know, that's just a tiny, tiny percentage of people being oversensitive and stupid. That's not a war. There's no war on Christmas. You know, Bill O'Reilly used to say this shit too. Oh, there's a war on Christmas. No, there. And then with Donald Trump too, you get the, you can say Merry Christmas again. You can say Merry Christmas again, thanks to my administration. It's like, what? Screw you, man. Like, these guys, they're just, oh, so self-righteous and so self-important and irritating. Obviously. Anyway, continue. Actually, wait, don't continue yet. There was this old Jon Stewart joke that I just heard, actually, which went something like, they're so not a war on Christmas that it's literally devouring other holidays. Like, literally, there are people, like, there is a guy in my neighborhood who put up his Christmas tree on Halloween, or like the day after Halloween. You know, it's like, oh my God. So Christmas is absorbing these other holidays that are that fall on this time of year. So anyway, now you can continue, Dennis.
Or more precisely, a war on the religious nature of America.
Wrong.
The left in America, like the left in Europe, wants to create a thoroughly secular society. Not a secular government, which is a desirable goal and which in any event has always been the case in America, but a secular society. Most people do not realize that the left believes in secularism as fervently as religious Jews and Christians believe in the Bible.
Wrong. Okay, secularism just means, again, separation of church and state, which he alluded to there, and I'm glad that he alluded to a secular government. He alluded to that. He said that he agreed with the concept of a secular government, which I'm not necessarily sure I believe, but let's just give him the benefit of the doubt and say that Dennis actually believes that it's a good thing to have a secular government. It's also a good thing, in my view, to have a somewhat secular society. Yes, people should be, in my opinion, people are missing out if they're not at least spiritual in some way. So I understand that, man. I get it. But it's not this nefarious leftist plot. No, it's not. It's just that people nowadays, they just don't trust religion like they used to. And they're not necessarily being taught either way. There's a growing segment of the population of both Europe and America that, you know, they're just not being raised religiously, but it's not the left's fault. That's a parenting decision. That's not the left's fault. It's like, but that's, this is Dennis Prager 101. You know, as I was talking about earlier, just like the left is evil by definition, and the right is good and pure by definition. And, you know, the whole Republicans good, Democrats bad thing, even though, again, I consider them both to be right-wing parties, but in terms of the broader ideological conversation, Dennis does do a lot of the, oh, the left is bad, and the right is good. It's like, nah. Anyway.
That's why Merry Christmas bothers secular activists.
No, it doesn't.
It's a blatant reminder of just how religious America is and always has been.
No, it doesn't. Again, maybe like six people, but overwhelmingly, again, 90% of the American people celebrate Christmas. Three quarters of the country is Christian. It's like there's not this prevailing, prominent leftist orthodoxy that says, you know, that is hostile to, like, inherently hostile and triggered by how religious America is. That's total bullshit. Again, he's just making stuff up. Surprise, surprise.
So here's a prediction. Activists on the left will eventually seek to remove Christmas as a national holiday.
Wrong.
Now, the left doesn't...
Nobody ever said that. Nobody's going to do that. You know, so Dennis, you know, just calm down. Nobody's going to do that. Nobody on the left, nobody on the right, nobody in the center. Nobody is going to get rid of Christmas. Okay? Cool. Glad we cleared that up.
Announced that its agenda is to thoroughly secularize American and European societies. Instead, they offer the inclusiveness argument that Merry Christmas or Christmas party or Christmas vacation is not inclusive. This inclusive argument plays on Americans' highly developed sense of decency, but the argument is preposterous. Who exactly is being excluded when one wishes someone Merry Christmas? Non-Christians? I'm a non-Christian. I'm a Jew. Christmas is not a religious holy day for me, but I'm an American, and Christmas is a national holiday in my country. It is therefore my holiday, though not my holy day, as much as it is for my fellow Americans who are Christian.
But again, you're missing the point, Dennis. I don't think there's a person... I don't think you'll find too many people. There we go. I don't think you'll find too many people that would refuse one in favor of the other, like the Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays thing. I think you should say both, depending on who you're interacting with. If, you know, you're interacting with the 90% of people that celebrate Christmas, sure, say Merry Christmas, whatever. But if you come across the 10% of people that don't celebrate Christmas, then it is more courteous to not say it. You know, like I said, I don't think that those people that are having Merry Christmas said to them, I don't think they should get overly offended and outraged. I'm just saying, as a mere matter of principle and courtesy, don't say it to that sect of the population. But again, overall, I really don't care about this. I really, really don't. I just covered this because I needed a laugh after the whole Obama-Bush fiasco that we listened to earlier. So anyway, nobody's talking about getting rid of Christmas as a national or religious holiday. Nobody wants that at all. Even a lot of atheists, I guarantee you, do not want that.
That's why it's not surprising that it was an American Jew, Irving Berlin, who wrote White Christmas, one of America's most popular Christmas songs. In fact, according to a Jewish musician writing in the New York Times, almost all the most popular Christmas songs were written by Jews.
True.
Apparently, all these American Jews felt quite included by Christmas.
They did, but that doesn't mean that, again, if you come across, say, a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Muslim or a Jain or something like that, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily appropriate to say that to them. Now, again, I'm not going to get offended and outraged if you, Dennis, choose to say that to them. And I don't think they should be outraged either. I'm just pointing out, again, it's a matter of, for the billionth time, it's a matter of just basic courtesy. So that's what we're talking about.
By not wishing me a Merry Christmas, you are not being inclusive. You are excluding me from one of my nation's national holidays.
Oh, yes, Dennis, you're such a victim. See, I love this. I absolutely love this. Because, again, there are conservatives that say all the time, oh, the left loves to play the victim. Look at how much they play the victim. You know, victimhood, blah, 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 blah. But then, again, with these conservatives, especially the ultra-religious ones, they can't wait. They crave the opportunity to play the victim. They love it. Absolutely love it. It's the, you know, the, just this martyr complex. It's stunning to me, the hypocrisy of that whole phenomenon. Anyway, carry on, Dennis.
But even if Christmas were not a national holiday, I would want pilots to wish their passengers Merry Christmas.
Good,
companies,
whatever.
Companies to have Christmas parties, and schools to continue to have Christmas vacations.
Who cares?
Just because I don't personally celebrate Christmas, why would I want to drop the word Christmas when the holiday is celebrated by 90% of my fellow Americans?
True.
It borders on the misanthropic, not to mention the mean-spirited, to want to deny nearly all of your fellow...
Oh my God. Do I really have to pull out the dictionary for this? Because I want to read you the definition. I mean, I know it. I just want the dictionary definition here. Do you know what a misanthrope is, for people that don't know? A misanthrope is, quote, a hater of humankind. So, in other words, if you oppose saying Merry Christmas to somebody, that's analogous in Dennis Prager's mind to hating all of humanity. Are you kidding me? Again, it's this victim bullshit. Oh my God. Oh my God. Anyway, continue.
Oh, citizens, the joy of having Christmas parties or being wished a Merry Christmas.
I love this animation. It's one of my favorites. There's a guy by a Christmas tree who's beating up Santa Claus. Dennis, nobody does that. Nobody's going to beat up Santa Claus, okay? Nobody on the left is going to beat up Santa Claus. Nobody on the right is going to beat up Santa Claus. Nobody wants to beat up freaking Santa Claus, okay? Anyway, carry on.
The vast majority of Americans who celebrate Christmas and who treat non-Christians so well deserve better. So please, say Merry Christmas and Christmas party and Christmas vacation. If you don't, you're not inclusive. You're hurtful. I'm Dennis Prager.
Once again, oh my God, once again, just this hypocrisy of, oh, the left, they're a bunch of snowflakes. It's like, that's what you're doing, Dennis. That's just, you know, that's literally what you just did. Like, oh, you're hurting my feelings because you won't say Merry Christmas. It's like, again, first of all, that's a very tiny percentage of people that are against that, first of all. And second of all, again, just, you're a snowflake. That's what it is. You're a triggered little snowflake, and you want your safe space where everybody says Merry Christmas, and nobody says Happy Holidays, and, you know, that's where you want to spend the rest of your days. Go ahead, Dennis. Go there. It's not going to be much of a loss to anybody else. So you go right ahead and you go to that safe space. So anyway, let's move on to the forehead, shall we? So I remember I was talking to you guys earlier about the I used the example of steel workers in an analogy earlier today on the podcast. So this is from the WSWS. This is a tie-in to what we were saying, or what I was saying, rather. So this is from WSWS, and the article is by Jessica Goldstein, and it says, quote, over 1,500 steelworkers to lose their jobs as U.S. Steel announces idling of Great Lakes works outside of Detroit. So I'll just summarize it for you guys. So basically, 1,545 workers are getting laid off at the Great Lakes Works facility of U.S. Steel, and it's just south of Detroit. And they're going to shut down a lot of operations at the steel mill in Detroit and move their production, their place of production, to Gary, Indiana. And basically, they want the company U.S. Steel is basically gonna cut benefits and decrease wages. It's insane. And by the way, Great Lakes Works is not immune to layoffs too, because last September, according to this article, over 200 workers at the Great Lakes Works plant or mill were laid off, and there was one furnace that was going to be shut down. So it's a pretty similar situation. And the United Steelworkers Union, or the USW, has basically chosen to basically say mum's the word about this. And the union, in fact, signed contracts with U.S. Steel. And another firm with these. So they signed contracts with U.S. Steel and this other company that are the two largest raw steel producers in the United States. And again, it was about cutting jobs, cutting wages, cutting benefits. Cut, cut, cut. And they mentioned that there was a U.S. Steel strike back in the fall of 2018, and the USW refused to take part in it. And they just kept giving concessions to the corporations and did, as my British friends listeners will be familiar with, they did fuck all for the workers. So and it's, they say here that closures like this cutdowns like this are not the result of unfair trade, as is sold to us by the Trump administration and, you know, by many administrations. It's actually just an externality of the capitalist system. This is what happens. And the trade war with China has hurt U.S. Steel massively. And it's just a gigantic shit show. It's really, really sad. And they also talk about how GM, General Motors, said that they would shut down 4 facilities in the United States and one in Canada. And there was a Ford plant that closed here in the United States that cut 7,000 jobs in the United States alone and 12,000 in Europe. It's unbelievable. Oh my God. 570,000 auto manufacturing jobs were cut in India and China this year. Oh my God. Unbelievable. So let's go to the other WSWS article, shall we? So this one, as I mentioned this gentleman earlier, Boris Johnson is the subject of this particular piece here by Robert Stevens, and he says, Queen's speech features Johnson government's anti-strike legislation. So basically, there's this thing called the Queen's speech, and I'm just gonna look that up really quick here. So it says here, this is an article from the BBC. It says, the Queen's speech provides the government with an opportunity to highlight its priorities for the months ahead. It forms part of the state opening of Parliament ceremony, which marks the start of the parliamentary year. The ceremony begins with a procession in which the Queen travels from Buckingham Palace to Westminster, usually by carriage. And so that's a little bit of background on the Queen's speech. So anyway, so Johnson outlined more than 30 bills that the conservative government was going to propose. And they are really hell-bent on getting Brexit done. Now, again, as I've said before, I support Brexit, but you have to do it in a smart way, and the Tories are not going about this in a very smart way. So basically, they're saying that this, quote, getting Brexit done agenda is very bad for the working class, and there's legislation within the bill that effectively bans strikes for the first time in the UK, in the UK's history. And there were some anti-strike measures from 79 to 97 with Thatcher and Major. But, you know, I guess they're trying to say that it wasn't brought up in the Queen's speech, I guess, until Boris Johnson just did it. So anyway, so transit workers are allowed to strike only if a minimum service agreement is struck beforehand, If not, then strikes can be banned outright. Outright. Sorry about that. So, railroads and things like that. It says that during the election campaign, the High Court intervened twice to rule illegal a strike ballot by 110,000 postal workers, as 40,000 higher education workers decided to strike to defend their pay, conditions, and pensions. Unbelievable. And of course, the Tories are excusing the transit strike by saying that for far too long, the militant rail unions have caused misery for passengers up and down the country. It's like they wouldn't have to strike if the government wasn't treating them like shit. So that's what I would say to that. Unbelievable. So, the Tories in this Queen's speech did promise to increase wages, but they say here that it's still relatively low, which is basically 10 pounds, 10 and a half pounds, and relative to the cost of living, it's still pretty low. So that's what they're going to increase it to. And then, of course, Johnson is talking about ramping up border security and 20,000, a 20,000 troop increase on the streets. Or not troop, police increase on the streets. Unbelievable. So basically, Boris Johnson is going to turn the UK into basically a fascist oligarchic police state. Good job, guys. Excellent job. So frustrating. All right. Well, with those two uplifting stories out of the way, I want to take you to another part of the world, and that is Iran, because there's been a lot of interesting stuff happening in Iran, and this is from Jacobin, and it says, the headline is, Why the Latest Uprising in Iran Matters. And this is by Frida Afari. She says, quote, mass protests kicked off in Iran last month over an increase in fuel prices, resulting in a government crackdown in which over 7,000 protesters were arrested and 200 were killed. An Iranian trade unionist explains what these protests have looked like on the ground and why leftists should support them. So another reason why the... okay, so Frida's the one being interviewed. I'm sorry, the article is from Emma Wild Botta. So they go over here. I'm going to summarize it again. They're basically going over how it's not just the fuel prices that kicked off this Iranian revolt, I guess, from the working class. It's an internet blackout in response to protests from earlier. Um, It's really, really bad over there. There's been all these military interventions, costly military interventions in Syria, Iraq, Lebanon, and Yemen that have just totally devastated the country's economy. The country's on the verge of economic collapse, it says. Then it says, because of the fact that we pulled out of the Iran deal, they're now, the Iranian government is starting to spend money on billions of dollars, as a matter of fact, on nuclear on its nuclear program again. And of course, it mentions the U.S. sanctions and IMF policies, the Iranian government is trying to, they say, rebuild the economy through alliances with China and Russia. There's the One Belt, One Road initiative from China, which is, you know, a foreign aid program, essentially. And, you know, again, Iranians just aren't happy with all of this. And it's nuts. And the Iran has become increasingly imperialistic. It's nuts. So I'm not gonna I'm not gonna read the rest of the article. But they also have been, of course, very cruel to people. The Iranian government, I'm talking about, they have been cruel to a lot of oppressed minority groups, the Kurds, ethnic Arabs, Baha'is, Sufis, and of course LGBTQ plus people. So, unbelievable. Things are really bad in Iran. And of course, I definitely would encourage solidarity with them. And this could be a good example for people. Like, Iran could get a at least nominally left-leaning government in their country and actually restore some dignity and some sanity to Iran. And the way that they govern, and could really serve as an example of how we can transform places like the Middle East and hopefully all around the world, but especially places like the Middle East into these, you know, these countries that actively uplift workers instead of keeping them down. That's what I want to say. So we'll have to see what goes on there as time goes by. But I can guarantee you that at least I'll be keeping an eye on it. So anyway, one last story for you guys. This is from The Hill. This is from The Hill. And I haven't covered very much, you know, American politics lately, so I felt that I'd do that. So the headline says, evangelical Trump supporters bash Christianity Today for calling for the for his removal from office. There we go. And this article is from Alicia Cohn. And let's see what she has to say here. She says, two prominent evangelical leaders are slamming the flagship evangelical magazine Christianity Today after it called for President Trump to be removed from office. And basically, there was a tweet from Jerry Falwell Jr. that is absolutely ridiculous. He was basically saying less than 20% of evangelical Christians supported Hillary Clinton in 2016. But now Christianity Today has removed any doubt that they are part of the same, he says 17% now. So yeah, it was 17% of evangelicals. So that they are now part of the 17% or so liberal evangelicals who have preached social gospel for decades. CT unmasked, wrote Jerry Falwell, president of the Evangelical Liberty University. Oh, that's great. Absolutely precious. And then Franklin Graham, who's the CEO of the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association and Samaritan's Purse and Evangelical Relief Program. There we go. Basically, he says, it's obvious that Christianity Today has moved to the left and is representing the elitist liberal wing of evangelicalism. That's ironic, considering how Trump is doing everything in his power to serve the interests of the elites, and you're not calling him out on that. So, and by the way, liberal evangelicals, I don't really see that that's a thing. Franklin Graham goes on to say that the magazine is being used by the left to push their political agenda. Excuse me. So the magazine was founded by Billy Graham, who's Franklin Graham's father, I think. Yep. And basically, Franklin Graham is talking about how Billy Graham knew Donald Trump and liked him and blah, 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 blah. And let's go to the fact section of the article here. She says, the writer of this article, the Alicia Cohn, she says, 81% of self-described white, born-again, or evangelical Christians voted for Trump in 2016, and 78% said they approved of his job performance as of March 2019, according to Pew Research Center. So basically, here's the magazine addressed those evangelicals in its editorial, quote, to the many evangelicals who continue to support Mr. Trump in spite of his blackened moral record, we might say this. Remember who you are and whom you serve. And that's a pretty good quote, in my opinion. I'm not necessarily a religious person anymore, but I think that's a great quote because it highlights the hypocrisy around evangelical Christianity that's like conservatized. There we go. So these guys, the evangelical Christian base, they claim, or at least act like they're moral and pure and righteous, yet they support a guy who, for president,
who admitted on tape that he doesn't wait for consent when having sex with women. Doesn't wait for consent, just starts kissing them and being inappropriate with them. He has cut things like food stamps and healthcare for the poor. You know, none of this stuff. He's cut taxes on the rich, and he's going to raise taxes on the middle class after 10 years. You know, none of this stuff represents... He's killed many, 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 many people with these continued wars. None of these policies are remotely Christian. Not at all. And, you know, Jesus, I think, would be ashamed if he were alive today and he saw what people were doing with what's ostensibly supposed to be his message. And they're twisting it to rationalize their own political agenda. It's not about a religious... It's not about following a religious doctrine. It's using religion to justify a certain political doctrine and political agenda. So that story doesn't necessarily make me mad. It highlights the hypocrisy, again, of those who claim to be the most pure are usually the most morally depraved. So, or at least they support people who are severely morally depraved, and they ignore that depravity because it's more about a personality cult and a political agenda than following a theological doctrine. So, anyway, hope you guys have a good holiday season, if you will. And for my listeners who happen to be Christian, Merry Christmas. I don't know if I have any Jewish listeners or not, but Happy Hanukkah. You know, all these holidays, it's wonderful, man. And we shouldn't ruin it with either PC bullshit or just, you know, uber political bullshit. So anyway, enjoy the weekend, or week, sorry, enjoy the week. And I'll be back with you guys, hopefully, next weekend. Because I think I'll be back by then from Christmas vacation. So, yeah, see you guys then. And I hope you'll join me at that time next week for The Left Side of Liberty.